From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Hillary Krieger, Enterprise Editor for CNN Politics Digital, and for the first time on our show, Tracy Wilkinson, Staff Writer at the Los Angeles Times. Welcome to the program, Tracy.
Thank you.
Glad to have somebody with so much experience overseas.
Thank you.
And we're going to benefit from that today. Here are the issues. President Trump's policy of temporarily suspending immigration to the United States of refugees and people from seven Muslim-majority countries was thrown out by a three-judge panel in California. In Washington, confirmation of nominees to Trump's cabinet continued, with very few Democrats backing the president's selections. And meanwhile, as House Democrats gathered to discuss policy, the party clashed over whether to resist Trump across the board or take a more conciliatory stance toward the president and his administration. Well, Hillary, we're going to start with something that's been a huge issue over the last week or more, and that is the refugee and immigration policy of Donald Trump. I think the policy is now dead or headed in that direction because the Supreme Court only has eight people, and if they split 4-4 on this, that upholds this decision by the Ninth Circuit Court in California. Now, I know the case is a little narrower, but what do you make of it?
Well, I definitely think that it's not the outcome that he was looking for, and I think it's been a little bit of a rude awakening for somebody who's a CEO and used to making decisions and having everyone get in line, that you have a much more unwieldy process and a lot of different power centers. And, you know, he rushed out this executive order. A number of people have pointed out that if it's reworded, it could potentially be implemented in a more limited capacity. And had he had more staff on board and been a little bit more careful and communicated better, maybe he would have been able to actually accomplish his goal. Now, if he goes ahead with that, he has to admit that they rolled it out the wrong way and made some mistakes with it.
Well, even members of his cabinet, I believe the Secretary of Homeland Security said it was rolled out too soon and not carefully.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, Trump wanted to come in and show that he was a man of action and do all these things. But like all new presidents, he runs into the realities of Washington. And we usually talk about that in terms of gridlock on Capitol Hill, mm-hmm. different local political interests that become a major blocking point. In this case, it's the court system. And right now, they've put him in a very bad place. But Trump doesn't like to lose. And I doubt we've heard the end of this issue.
Tracy?
Well, you know, you mentioned that were this to go to the Supreme Court, a 4-4 vote, but I'm not even sure it would be a 4-4 vote.
Well,
because,
I'm not either. But,
yeah, because even Supreme Court nominee Gorsuch has written in the past about changing immigration law that affects people in the process that they're already in. Mm-hmm. He has said that's not allowable. And so you could see that perhaps this would not be a vote along party lines. Mm-hmm. But neither here nor there, yeah, I do think that Trump has either got to go back to the drawing board and come up with a law that is, or an executive order that is defendable and legal. And he could do that. And this is the thing, that he repeatedly sort of shoots himself in the foot, because you could do a similar kind of ban legally. And he just, you know, did not consult with the, you know, his cabinet, the State Department, all of the fine legal minds that he has at his disposal, and came up with something that just, you know, it cannot be defended. But I think you're right. We have not seen the end of this. He does not like to lose. He said, you know, see you in court. So we'll see what happens.
One of the things I've noticed is, Hillary, is that the initial judge in this case in the state of Washington, and now the three members of this appeals court bench, and a woman, a Justice Department official, temporarily a holdover from the Obama administration, have objected particularly to the policy and have asked some of the questions by the appeals court were about, well, have people come from these countries in the past then committed terrorism in the United States? And the question I thought should be raised is a question of, well, does the president have the authority to do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, this is complicated. It's not straightforward at all, in part, partly because the executive order was hasty and sweeping, but also because there are a lot of different types of people affected. So initially, it seemed like green card holders, people who are permanent residents of the United States, could be affected by this. Which,
well, they were, for a few
right,
days.
Exactly, which is very different from a legal perspective for people who live in these countries now and sometime in the future want to apply for a visa to come to the United States for the first time. And, you know, a lot of people who are defending at least aspects of the executive order say that they don't have any standing to bring a case and seek constitutional protections. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's an entire range of thorny legal implications that mm-hmm. get to these broader policy questions of, you know, who is allowed to be in the United States and under what circumstances. And that is an area where the president does have wide discretion. So I do think there are ways that, you know, people who might like to say that there's a very, you know, clear line about what's protected and what are values and mm-hmm. et cetera. Also, you know, if there is a carefully crafted order, there are a lot of things that Trump could do to take these kinds of steps. But you're also talking about that's in the legal framework, but what about the political environment?
Mm-hmm.
And in the usually you have to have a political argument. And he's chosen countries and people that don't match up with the perpetrators of domestic terror attacks. So his argument that this is going to make America more secure is a difficult one for him to make versus the damage that's done to people who have ties to, you know, foreigners in different countries. Mm-hmm. And so there's a face to these stories of the people who are being denied entry or having difficulties. There, for a while, there was an Iranian 1 month old who was supposed to get heart surgery that almost, you know, for a while couldn't come. Mm-hmm. So that makes for a compelling political argument versus not having terror attacks that we won't ever be able to know. So it's a little harder in that sense. So it leaves a lot of room for both sides to play out, both on the legal and then on the politics and optics of it.
Some people defending President Trump on this have said, well, look, oh, the president, you know, he strategically, in the big picture, he's doing the right thing, but tactically, he screwed this policy up. What do you make of that? Obviously, tactically, obviously, the rollout of his plan has been a disaster.
No, exactly. It was a huge disaster. Yes, he has the authority to control immigration. That is within the president's purview. But as Hillary said, the countries that were singled out have not produced terrorists that have committed acts of terror in the United States. A Palestinian said to me yesterday, when's the last time a terrorist went to the U.S. embassy in their country and applied for a visa? You know, that's not how it works. So,
well, there have actually been some.
Well, that was
Saudi Arabia,
which was not included on the list, right? So, mm-hmm. So technically it was a disaster. But even his bigger argument of making America safer doesn't really hold true, given that these countries have not produced terrorists mm-hmm. that have attacked the United States. And the vetting process is pretty fierce, and mm-hmm. he ignores that. He ignores that there, in fact, is a vetting process where a refugee or an immigrant from some of these countries, it can take months, if not years, mm-hmm. for them to get clearance to come mm-hmm. to the United States. And so, again, that sort of belies his argument that he's making America safer by blocking those people. Well, no, there is already a pretty you know, vigorous process to screen them.
I think it's also telling that, you know, there was a place where he really did have popular political support. Mm-hmm. There was and potentially still is a lot of fear in the American public about Syrian refugees coming in. There is a very stringent process in place. You know, certainly Obama administration officials thought that they were being careful enough in who they were letting in, but there was a lot of concern among the American public that was used very effectively by Republicans, especially Trump during the campaign. And he could have come in and simply stopped Syrian refugees, which is one small piece of this mm-hmm. executive order. Again, if he had tailored it properly, it would have been much easier for him to do under his prerogatives. And that could have been the focal point of what everybody would have been focused on that aspect, which has popular political support in at least mm-hmm. some very strong, you know, Republican areas. That could have been a win for him.
Mm-hmm.
But by making something sweeping, it changes the entire mm-hmm. storyline to all these people who don't have, you know, any connection to what's happening currently in Middle East or terrorism, and is something that is, for many Americans, hard to understand. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, another case of him really hurting his own message when he could take steps that could win him political points.
I want to point to a piece by Byron York of the Washington Examiner, in which he cites some cases which even the lawyer for President Trump didn't seem to know of actual terrorism cases by immigrants from these seven countries, including one last November when a Somali refugee wounded 11 people during a machete attack on the campus of Ohio State University. This was last November, but that's not what I want to pursue here, Tracy. Why, you've been overseas so much, Mexico most recently, as the Los Angeles Times correspondent. I perfectly well understand how the protests in the United States. I don't really understand, since this doesn't affect many people outside the United States, the explosion of hostility to this policy all around the world.
All around the world, yeah. I think that it was seen as sort of a betrayal of what the United States has long stood for, as a refuge for people who are abused and persecuted and under threat of death, you know, including even people who'd worked for the United States as interpreters in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And so I think that that's why there was such an explosion around the world, that really betrayed what the United States had stood for so long. And just such an unpredictable, you know, no one really kind of saw this coming. And I think that's what really fueled a lot of this protest around the world.
Well, I certainly was one of those who did not see this coming. Anyway, we'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Tracy Wilkinson of the Los Angeles Times, who you've just heard, and Hillary Krieger of CNN Politics. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. Hillary, you're grinning over there when I say this about a podcast. Podcasts have become extraordinarily popular. I've been surprised at that, too. But anyway, the program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Well, maybe we can comment very quickly on the confirmation process. And, of course, President Trump nominates people for positions in his administration, like the cabinet, and it's gone very, very slowly. But a couple have been passed, more than a couple, in the last few days. One of them, Jeff Sessions, a senator from Alabama, as attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer, and Betsy DeVos of Michigan, a woman for education secretary, and the normally cabinet secretaries, even if members of the opposition party don't like them much, they will go ahead and give the president whoever he wants. Not in this case. Betsy DeVos got no Democratic votes, and Jeff Sessions got one.
Right, and Betsy DeVos actually lost to Republicans.
Indeed.
So for the first time in history, the vice president had to cast the deciding vote to get her confirmed, which I think, you know, tells you two things. One is that the partisan gridlock in Washington, some of the etiquette around deference to, say, a president to have his choice of nominees. But there are a lot of other examples where there were at least some places for cooperation, for, you know, debate, for things.
We haven't found those yet.
Well, we've always had problems with those things in Washington, but you always had, you know, a few things that I wouldn't say were removed from politics, but part of the political game was that you were gracious on certain parts. And both parties have really backtracked from that. And now it's hard to find a place where there isn't bitter partisan fighting over even, it can be ceremony and things that are really sort of just the lubricants of the Washington scene that have been taken away and make everything creaky. But also because Trump did choose a very controversial nominees in most cases, people like Betsy DeVos, who've been really very critical of public education and have caused, you know, a lot of concerns among constituents. So the Capitol was just absolutely flooded with phone calls. I mean, 10, 20 times more phone calls than they normally get all across the country.
It's hard to get through the switchboard now
at
the Capitol. I mean,
exactly,
really, it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Those, and the number one issue by far was people complaining about the DeVos nomination. So,
well, there was an organization or two behind those phone calls.
Absolutely.
And,
but,
and Republicans do the same thing.
Right. But I mean, so you've seen that. So it's both that you have people who are, I think, not everyone, but you can argue that many of them are at the more extreme ideological end of the spectrum and maybe more unconventional. And so they don't have as much traditional government experience and things that people would look to that could help them go through a confirmation process more easily on the one hand. But on the other hand, you've seen this incredible partisan rancor. There were ads that were being run against Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen ads run against a nominee for a cabinet position before.
Well, on the other hand, there were also ads in favor of him. I've never seen ads, television ads,
My point is that the partisans are like investing money in arguments mm-hmm. over things that mm-hmm. were never considered mm-hmm. worth spending advertising dollars on, for instance. So, exactly.
Yeah, Tracy, feel free to say something about him, and I want to steer you in a different direction, but I was going to say feel free to say anything you want about Sessions and DeVos. But you cover the State Department, and Rex Tillerson was nominated a little easier for Secretary of State. There was certainly some opposition, but why was he so? He was a lot less controversial.
He was less controversial because, on the one hand, he was a man of the world, and that was seen in his favor as someone who could be kind of reasonable and well thought. He could think about the world in a reasonable way. The controversy was that, of course, he had been ExxonMobil's CEO for so many years, mm-hmm. and his close ties to Russia and to Putin, and all of that, his refusal in the past to support sanctions, the issue of climate change. And so that was the controversy. In the end, you know, he did not win Democratic support. He was approved along party lines. The Republicans voted for him, the Democrats against. I think that, and I don't know, I'm new to D.C., but I don't know if this is normal that there be this much opposition. But I do think, as Hillary was saying, that Trump picked very controversial nominees, people, you know, someone for education who said that department should be eliminated. You know, that's kind of a existential threat to the very department they're being nominated to.
No, you have been away, but that's become a Republican talking point.
Yes.
Get rid
but
of
with
the
Tillerson,
education department.
I mean, people are in the State Department. We're still waiting to see, mm-hmm. but a lot of people in the State Department say that Tillerson at least is going around and asking for people's opinions, mm-hmm. talking to people, saying, you know, I don't know this necessarily. Tell me what you think. So he's being a lot more reasonable and willing to hear diverse opinions than Trump, for example, would, mm-hmm. would suggest. And so I think that's why he's getting a slightly easier ride than a lot of the nominees.
Okay, here I'm going to move to this one right now. There's a debate among Democrats, one side's particularly winning, and you'll know which one it is, Hillary, between this across-the-board fierce opposition to just about anything Trump does and other Democrats who say, look, that's not going to help the party recover, and we need to win some things, and we can agree with Trump. Well, maybe not agree, but at least compromise with Trump on some things. The leader of that position is the former chief of staff at the Obama White House, Rahm Emanuel, who's now the mayor of Chicago, but who said to other Democrats the other day in a speech, you need to chill out. We need to win. That's what we have to do. We can't be the arbiters of any policy until we actually win some things. What do you make of that?
First of all, I think that the Democrats watched the Republicans and saw that they had a very successful strategy against Obama. I mean, Mitch McConnell, when he became the Senate majority leader, said, we're going to be the party of no. And, you know, a decision of strategy that the best interest of Republicans wasn't to go along with Obama and find those points of agreement, but really to be a very verbal and active check on the president. And that won them a lot of support. I mean, they took both houses. They now have the presidency. I don't think that the Democrats obviously lost those things. So I don't think that the Democrats think that there's a much of an advantage politically to mm-hmm. being more conciliatory, finding more place of compromise. And in fact, you had Rahm Emanuel, who was the architect of the last time the Democrats controlled the House, because mm-hmm. he found people who were much more moderate in different mm-hmm. districts and was able to get people to win. Mm-hmm. But then they ran into trouble because they were moderates and they quickly lost. I think his argument on the face of it makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. but he was the person who was kind of the face of the previous Democratic attempt running the country, and they, you know, across the board, the Democrats were pushed out. So there are a lot of people who want a new approach.
Tracy, again, feel free to comment on that, but we'll go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that it's an argument you hear at so many different levels, not just in Congress, of, you know, do we go along with this on some elements or not? Diplomats, can I really represent this government overseas? Journalists, can I really, you know, this is such an aberration of a presidency that I think a lot of people are grappling with that of how to, you know, do we treat it as normal and go along with it on some things, or do we oppose it at every step? And I think that's an argument we're going to hear on many, many levels for a while now.
I think you're right about that. But let me ask you about this. Trump, a few days ago, endorsed the One China policy that past presidents have certainly endorsed and followed. Indeed, even though Trump had taken a phone call from the president of Taiwan, which upset the Chinese, at least the Beijing Chinese. And I wasn't really surprised to see this. You know, the president, President Trump, he had been so critical of NATO. Now he's a great supporter of NATO. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think this tells us that he doesn't really think out sometimes what he says. Not only did he take that call from the Taiwan president, he said something along the lines of, oh, one China policy, why should we follow that? You know, what does that mean? And now he's in favor of one China. He is now supportive of NATO. He is now backing off from moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, would have been a very provocative step. And at first,
on that one, though, you know, I've heard so many politicians in America say they want to move the embassy, but when it really comes down to it,
right? I think every president has said they would do it, and no one has because the reality with Iran, you know, all of this bombastic talk about, you know, clamping down on Iran, and then the sanctions that he imposes are just you know, ditto from what Obama was doing. So. I think that some reality is beginning to infuse his rhetoric. And so while he'll say one thing, he does something else. And it means you have to watch what he does as opposed to what he says. And I think he doesn't really have a sound basis for a lot of his opinions. It's just sort of off the cuff kinds of stuff. And that when it comes down to the actual policy, he's going to have to, and he is having to sort of be a little more reasonable.
Well, what do you think of that, Hillary? I certainly, I'd forgotten about the moving the embassy. You know, when he said he was going to move it to Jerusalem, you know, I had a strong feeling, you probably did too, that wasn't going to happen. But even Charles Krauthammer, the columnist, a very big supporter of Israel, is against this and has said, what do you gain from it? You do create a huge protest if you did move the embassy to Jerusalem, outside of Israel, of course. What about Trump in these things?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a very standard progression from somebody who's on the campaign trail saying things that the constituency, people who support Israel, want to hear, that the embassy is going to be moved to Jerusalem. So you throw out these things to get elected. And then you get into the White House and you're president. And actually, Ariel Sharon had a great saying when he became prime minister in Israel, and he had been a very, you know, hardcore right winger. And all of a sudden, he was the architect of removing the Israeli settlements and Israeli military presence from Gaza. And he said, what you see from there is different than what you see from here. And I think that's happens to every person who comes into the White House. And Trump seems somewhat impervious to that for the first time. You saw him continue, and you still do on Twitter, the types of statements he makes, whether it's personal attacks, whether it's off-the-cuff broad statements of policy. These are things he's continued to do. But he is in the White House now. He's not, you know, on a campaign tour. And I think there's just some recognition of what, you know, the staff, the establishment, the reason there are certain norms and a certain status quo, both that counteracts what he's doing, but also makes things appear a little different. So you're starting to see some of that transition. I don't know how far it'll go, but I think you're starting to see that reality setting in.
Well, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Hillary Krieger, Enterprise Editor for CNN Politics Digital, and Tracy Wilkinson, Staff Writer at the Los Angeles Times. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.